Hello, everybody. This is Morgan Richter from Miami Vice Changed Everything on YouTube, and you are listening to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. We are here today to cover the soundtrack to the TV series Miami Vice. And before we get started, I have a bit of a bomb I have to drop.
Okay.
This is going to blow not just your minds, but several of our listeners' minds. Okay. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I have never seen an episode of Miami Vice. Not one single episode. Obviously, it was a pop culture nuclear bomb. I'm totally familiar with the concepts and all of that. But when Miami Vice aired, I was like 8 years old. I wasn't staying up until 10 watching TV. My parents were certainly not going to let me watch cop shows about drugs and cocaine and
hookers
prostitutes.
And blow, yeah.
Yes. So I never grew up with it. My sibling, Rafe watched Magnum PI, and that was it. So I have never seen a single solitary episode. And so to make up for this gaping hole of knowledge that I have, we have brought on a special guest who knows literally everything about every single episode of Miami Vice, even the stuff that people who know everything don't know.
That's right. So welcome to the show, Morgan Richter, who is author, YouTuber, Miami Vice expert. Morgan, welcome to our show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I am extremely excited to be here. And Miami Vice is one of those subjects that I can talk about all day. So that's what I'm looking forward to doing.
As I understand it, it's MTV Cops. Is that right?
Yes, that is exactly how it was pitched to the executives at NBC and TV Cops. And indeed, it had the look and the feel, and most importantly, the sound of music videos. So I think that was a really great way to describe it. I'm always leery of people who make big sweeping statements, but I would say that Miami Vice's legacy is that it made music important to television. There have been many television shows that have made excellent use of music before and after Miami Vice, but I'm at a loss to think of another example at which the soundtrack and the score are as crucial as they are in Miami Vice. So MTV Cops, MTV premiered in 1981, Miami Vice premiered in 1984, and I think it rode that wave of music videos.
Absolutely. And so we're at the end of this, we're going to compare it to the Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack, which we covered last week, and we just put you on the spot, but you're familiar with that soundtrack, so you're going to weigh in with your own final judgment at the end of this.
Absolutely. Prepared
all
to
right.
do that.
Well, fantastic. Well, Dee's got his pastels over here, and he's wearing his white jacket and no socks. And
no socks and loafers,
I've
baby.
Got my sawed-off shotgun over here, and we're ready to be the Crockett and Tubbs along with, Morgan, you're going to be Gina or Trudy with us this time?
I'll be a combination of Gina and Trudy. Actually, I'm just going to be the Castillo in all this.
Yeah, there you go. Well, just glare at us if we do something wrong, right?
Right.
Okay, so just a quick overview of the Miami Vice soundtrack. So this album went 4 times platinum, sold 4 million copies. This is no slouch of an album. This is actually the first of 3 soundtracks from Miami Vice to be released. That struck me because I remember the first one. I don't remember the other two. It spent 11 weeks at number 1 on the Billboard Hot 200 and is the best-selling TV album until High School Musical came along in 2006.
Well, obviously. I mean, High School
right.
Musical. Jeez. That was an atomic bomb right there.
Yeah, I mean, how can you measure up to the legacy of High School Musical?
Right, right. And I mean, this had number one hits on it. So I'm ready to dive into the songs. If you're ready to dive into the songs.
These songs are too good to wait any longer. Let's just jump in right now. Number one, out of the bag. Sure thing. You got to intro with the TV theme to Miami Vice.
Yes.
Okay, so the sound of the 80s, is that too much? This is the sound of the mid-80s, right?
Absolutely.
Like every other serious cop drama before this was orchestral or maybe the piano from Hill Street Blues, but nothing was as pop synth heavy as this intro theme until this moment in time.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is composer-performer Jan Hammer, who is born in the former Czechoslovakia. He's known as a synthesizer pioneer, which of course he should be. And I think people sometimes when they're thinking of 80s music, when they're thinking of synthesizers, just think of some guy standing at an electronic piano, essentially. And in this case, it's much more complicated than that. He is using synths and sequencers like the Fairlight CMI, which was very popular in contributing to what we now think of as the sound of the 80s, to build the layers of the sound. In this track, we hear synth guitars and we hear all different kinds of drums. And I think there's like a xylophone in there, and there are all these electronic sounds that we can't quite identify. It's extremely complicated. And I think this 1 minute track is brilliant for showing people the possibilities of synthesized music.
Yeah. So he was a genuine pioneer in the electronic music field. Everybody remembers the keyboard that was held like a guitar from the 80s. That's him. He did that. And I've listened to several interviews and I really feel like he was a guy who wanted to be out like the lead guitarist is and not stuck behind the keyboards. And so here's something interesting. He's done a cover of a Jimi Hendrix song called Manic Depression.
Okay.
It's fantastic. It's all on keyboard, but he sounds like Hendrix playing the electric guitar. Actually, he met Hendrix when he first got involved in music, met him, and they talked, and Hendrix was telling him he was interested in getting into the jazz side of things like Jan Hammer was doing at the time. Unfortunately, that also was the year that Jimi Hendrix died, so that didn't get to happen. But he grew up in a jazz household, like in Prague in the former Czechoslovakia. His mom was a renowned jazz singer. His dad was a cardiologist, but also played jazz music with his mom. He had Louis Armstrong over to his house when he was a little kid.
What?
Because they were so prominent in Czechoslovakia.
Wow.
And then obviously he started playing piano at 4. He goes on and obviously becomes very proficient at it. And so they go with him to the U.S. to study at the Berklee College of Music in Boston. And they're thinking this is just his opportunity to really hone his skills. He had actually wanted to be a doctor, but somebody talked him into being a musician instead. I don't know how that happens. But it was the beginning of his career, but it was the end of theirs. Because when they went back to Czechoslovakia, which was communist run at that point, they were like, hey, you guys just spent a year in a Western country. We're not going to let you produce records anymore. And so she couldn't produce any records for 20 years after this. But Jan gets started playing with Sarah Vaughan. He plays prominently with Jeff Beck and Neil Schon, Oklahoma's own Neil Schon.
Journey.
From Journey. Band was Schon and Hammer.
What?
Yeah.
Schon and Hammer.
Schon and Hammer.
Hammer.
I'm not kidding. Not kidding.
Love that.
And then in 84, he gets back with Jeff Beck on Jeff Beck's album called Flash. And he has a song on there called Escape that wins the Grammy that year. And of course, that's the same year that he gets a call from Michael Mann, who says, I want you to not only do the theme song, I want you to do all of the soundtrack for this new series I'm doing.
It's incredible. So this song shows up in My Brother's Keeper, which is the first episode of Miami Vice, September of 1984.
Though the version that was used in Brother's Keeper, the pilot episode, is not that 1 minute version. It's the one that will appear later on in this soundtrack, where it's a much longer, extended, and slightly different one. And in fact, the first few Miami Vice episodes used a slightly different version. It wasn't until, I think, like episode 5 or something, I think Heart of Dark, around that time, that this version of the theme specifically started being used.
Wow, that's fantastic. You know, that I watched that first episode and there's Jimmy Smits as Crockett's partner, right?
Right.
I was like, what?
Yeah. And then immediately Jimmy Smits gets blown to smithereens and will never show up in the series again. Yeah.
Yep. That's exactly right. So due to the show's popularity, this was released as a single August of 85. It hits number one November 9th of 1985. An instrumental from a television show hits number one on the Hot 100. What? That shows the extreme popularity of this show. It also shows the kind of the weakness of the chart. So I got this for you. Okay. Here is the top five from November 9th of 85. Okay.
Uh-oh.
Number five. I know people hate this song, but I actually kind of have a soft spot for it. Number five, We Built This City by Starship.
Yeah. I have a weak spot for it too. I know it's terrible. I intellectually know all the reasons why people hate it, but I like it anyway.
Number four, You Belong to the City by Glenn Frey, off of this soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Number three, Head Over Heels by Tears for Fears.
That's a good one.
That's a good song.
That's a fantastic song, that's, and we're going to be covering that here in just a few weeks.
I'm
right?
waiting for you to get to the weak spot on the chart.
Okay,
here,
you ready? Ready? Yeah. The number two song, maybe the worst song of the 1980s. I hate this song. Part-Time Lover by Stevie Wonder.
hate all Stevie Wonder songs.
I do not. I think that's the dumbest song. You hate all
Stevie Wonder. You are a Stevie Wonder hater.
I guess.
I think that's a fantastic song. I think your analysis of the charts in 85 is absolutely wrong.
I agree. I've never heard of anyone hating Part-Time Lover until right this moment. We Built This City, I will grant you, is a terrible song, but I like it anyway. But I grant you that's a terrible song. But those are earworm still, those are still solid.
Yeah. I'm going to default to our lovely guest and just say, okay, sorry, my bad. And then, of course, number one is the Miami Vice theme. Now, get this. I've got a couple of connections to a previous show that we did, all right? So this is the last instrumental to hit number one since, you know this, Morgan?
I don't. If I had to guess of an instrumental theme hitting, I'd say Mission Impossible, but I don't know.
That's a good guess. It's actually the Harlem Shake from 2013.
Oh, you went in a different direction there. Sorry, I wasn't even following. But yeah, no, totally.
Wait a second. You're saying the Harlem Shake from 2013 was the first instrumental since this one?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I had it wrong.
You said you were asking about what came before it.
No. The Harlem Shake is the only instrumental since the Miami Vice. Sorry if I said that wrong.
That's okay.
You might not have.
We got it on tape, so we'll check your mouth here in a little bit. Yeah.
Okay, now wait. I got more. There's only one other song from a television show to hit number one since the Miami Vice theme. Any guesses on this? Yes. Are you looking at my notes?
No, but the answer is obvious.
What?
I mean, we talked about it when we did our last episode. The answer has got to be I'll Be There For You on From Friends.
That's a good guess. That is not the right answer.
Oh. How do you talk to
an angel? It is How Do You Talk to an Angel from the television show The Heights.
The Heights.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, The Heights has been off of my radar for so long that I forgot that song existed. But yeah, it was a juggernaut for that brief moment in time when The Heights was a thing.
Very brief.
Yes. Okay, quickly. When this song hit number one, the album was already number one. And that's the first time a TV show had a number one song and a number one album at the same time. And in 2003, readers of TV Guide voted this the most popular television theme song of the past 50 years. Andy Griffith theme finished second.
Wow. Morgan, I got a quick question for you. Do you like the Eagles?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, the next song is by a former and then again, an Eagle. God rest his soul. Somebody named Glenn Frey.
Next song, Smuggler's Blues by Glenn Frey. My favorite song in the album.
That's fine with me.
I love it.
I'm okay with that being your favorite song.
So as I understand it, Michael Mann heard the song and went to his writers and said, hey guys, we need to build an episode around this song. Is that right, Morgan?
That is correct. Specifically, he saw the music video for Smuggler's Blues and was directly inspired by the music video. And they kind of just came up with an episode that was a riff on that video, except just using Crockett and Tubbs and going on this, you know, they're undercover, of course, but it's sort of a drug smuggling adventure that goes horribly wrong, as it does in the lyrics of Smuggler's Blues.
I'm sorry it went down like this. Someone had to lose. It's the nature of the business. It's the Smuggler's Blues.
This is a great song, and I love the lyrics, which are just very clever and fun, and it's this blues song, and it's ostensibly a cautionary tale, but you always get the feeling that Glenn Frey is having an awful lot of fun while smuggling, so you know, even though it goes terribly wrong, you'd be cool for 20 hours, and I'll pay you 20 grand, he's having a good time.
This is the one where, like, he and the partner go to do the drug deal, and then his partner comes out shot, right?
Exactly right. I love this video. I told D, I texted him this week, I'm like, the 4 minutes of this music video could be one of the best episodes of Miami Vice in season one. It's just, you get everything packed in there. You get a murder, you get a drug deal, you got a bad thing gone wrong, and then you got a betrayal, and it's great. The music video is awesome.
Yeah, it's this beautiful little film, and I really miss the days kind of when people were doing music videos that felt comfortable telling a complete story with a beginning, middle, and end.
So this one, the album that this one is off, Glenn Frey's album, is called The All Nighter, and he co-wrote this song with a guy named Jack Temption. Jack Temption wrote Peaceful Easy Feeling. He co-wrote Already Gone.
Yes.
not too shabby.
I mean, two of the 10 off of the Eagles' greatest hits right there. Plus, he also co-wrote You Belong to the City, which we'll talk about here in just a few minutes. Glenn Frey obviously is a musician by trade. He also acts, but he is one of several musicians to appear in Miami Vice. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have a list for me? Because I got a list.
I have a top of head list.
Go for it.
I mean, obviously, you've got James Brown, and you have Little Richard, and you have Gene Simmons, and you have Frank Zappa, and then I kind of derail after that.
But that's pretty
good.
Those
are some big ones.
So, as I understand it, James Brown, in the episode that he was in, was an alien. And
not an illegal immigrant. he was an abductee of aliens. And,
okay.
Yeah, that's a season 4 episode, and it's missing hours, and it's quite widely regarded as the worst ever episode of Miami Vice. But in my review, I come up with at least 10 episodes that I like less than that one. It's it's a failure, but it's kind of a fascinating failure in that it actually has a very Twin Peaks feel several years before Twin Peaks premiered. And James Brown is great in it as the legendary musician who happens to have deep connections to aliens.
So we kind of touched on the fact that you've got this knowledge base and that you are a YouTuber, if you will. Tell us a little bit more about this channel, because you literally go through episode by episode and review each one. Is that right?
Yeah. My channel's essentially defunct now because I got through all of Miami Vice. I did every single episode of Miami Vice, and I also did 100 80s films that kind of defined the 80s for Gen Xers like myself. But yes, I did every single last episode of Miami Vice on YouTube.
And so you mentioned that the James Brown episode was from season 4. As Michael Mann was there for, was it 1 through 3?
1 through 2. And then Dick Wolf took over in season 3. And my hotly controversial position on Miami Vice is that people really like season 3. And that's the one that I'm really met on, where I think Dick Wolf, for all of his strengths with television, he does crime procedurals. And Miami Vice was kind of too weird for Dick Wolf. And he kind of stripped it of a lot of the elements about it that were kind of jarring and off-putting. Like the example I always use, and this is just a stylistic thing, but in the first 2 seasons, Michael Mann's episodes, they would end usually with a freeze frame right after the climax. And you would have no denouement, and there would be no time for the audience to kind of unfold what they'd just seen. And it was really jarring, but really good. Like, there are several episodes in those first 2 seasons that end with a gunshot and the freeze frame, and you know something terrible just happened, but cut to credits and, you know, you go off to your Friday night deeply unsettled. With season 3, with Dick Wolf's things after Michael Mann left, you'd get tag endings where you'd get a gunshot and somebody would be shot and killed, and then you'd get Crockett and Tubbs being really sad for a while about how that didn't work out the way it planned, and it was just very much more a traditional cop show. Season 4 got really weird, and that's where all of a sudden we're having alien abductions, and they have a lot more of failures, but I like it more than season 3. I prefer weird to a very generic cop show. Not that there's anything wrong with, say, a Dick Wolf cop show. It's just not what I was watching Miami Vice for.
Okay, I got the rest of the musicians, okay? You got Gene Simmons, like you said. We have Leonard Cohen. We have Phil Collins, right?
Yes, of course.
Phil Collins as Phil the Shill.
Yeah, Phil Collins.
Ted Nugent, who shows up, mm-hmm. who's stealing cars.
Playing a murderer, of course. Yeah.
Right? James Brown, Little Richard, Barbara Streisand, Frank Zappa, like you said, Willie Nelson, Harry mm-hmm. Shearer, Miles Davis. You get the Power Station show up. Mm-hmm. You get Sheena Easton as Crockett's love interest.
Mm-hmm.
You get Isaac Hayes, David Johansen singing at a party. But I wanted to bring up somebody who I'm wondering if you know who this is. Do you know who Janie Beggs is? So Janie Beggs is Glenn Frey's wife. She is the woman in the Smuggler's Blues video. Okay. So that was his then wife. They were married from 83 to 88. She was a debutante from Fort Worth. Her family owned a big cattle company. Well, she married a big crazy rock star. Well, they have since divorced. And post-divorce, when the Eagles would play Lying Eyes, he would dedicate the song to his wife, quote unquote, plaintiff. And that's the woman in this video who did not stay cool for 20 hours.
20 grand?
I don't know. I don't think she got the 20 grand either. Okay, next song on the album is a song called Own the Night by Chaka Khan.
Okay, so this is interesting to me because if you just played me this song and said, is this on the Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack or is this on the Miami Vice? I'd been like, Beverly Hills, 100%.
Right.
This sounds like it comes off the Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack.
So Chaka Khan has this big 1984-85. Chaka Khan.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly due to the song, I Feel For You. Written by?
I'm guessing it's Allie Willis.
It's not Allie Willis. It's Prince. Prince wrote I Feel For You.
That's right. She did have some high moments, and 84 was a pretty good year for her.
Sure.
So it makes sense that they would put her on this album. Now, if you didn't know, she began with playing with Rufus, the band Rufus, which, tell me something good. And then she, of course, when she went out solo, she did the original version of I'm Every Woman, which Whitney Houston made huge around this time, too, a few years later, I guess.
Sure.
And then she went on around the time that Whitney Houston was doing that and did Higher Love with Stevie Winwood.
Higher Love. Now you're talking my language. Yeah.
I knew that I would hit you on that one, you pop fiend.
So this song shows up in the episode called Buddies. Morgan, I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you got for us on Buddies?
Buddies is one of those things that obviously I have done an entire YouTube episode on it. And it's one I've seen several times. And it just leaves my memory banks as soon as I've seen it. Like, Buddies is the season one episode that it's got some good guest stars. It stars James Remar as Crockett's old army buddy who drags him down into trouble. And it's got guest stars include Nathan Lane and Frankie Valli. Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot about a baby, and I just never really remember it. And like, to prep for this podcast, because, with Own the Night, I don't really remember the scene that Own the Night appears in, so I should rewatch Buddies. And then I had a moment of like, no, life is too short for me to rewatch Buddies. And so I didn't.
I've got like the answer for you.
It plays in a bar, right?
It plays in the club when Crockett and Tubbs see Robbie.
Yes. Okay.
This song was released as a single. It's the only one that didn't hit the top 40. It only made it to number 78.
Deservedly so.
Yeah. It's not a great song.
I had no idea it was released as a single. I knew it's one of the ones that was written specifically for Miami Vice, I believe. But yeah, it's fine. You know?
Right.
It sounds like the song is about as memorable as Buddies.
That's right. There you go.
Okay.
Well, all right.
Let's move on then.
Let's jump back into Glenn Frey again.
Call him Glenn Frey again.
Detroit's own Glenn Frey. Now, the first song that we listened to was obviously off of an album that he had already done, but he came along and wrote a song specifically for Miami Vice. And that's this song called You Belong to the City. Sax intro on the radio cut.
Sexy sax right there.
Is this in your list of top sax pop songs of all time?
Yeah.
Careless Whisper?
Yeah. Got the sexy sax. So this song was written specifically for the show and shows up in The Prodigal Son, which is season 2, episode 1.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that?
Great episode. Season 2 premiere. It's a big 2-part one, and it's Crockett and Tubbs end up going to New York, so it's almost completely out of Miami. And You Belong to the City plays while Tubbs is from New York, and this is his hometown, and Crockett is kind of the fish out of the water, but he's walking the New York streets at night, and the song is playing. I really like Smuggler's Blues, but I love You Belong to the City. It's one of my favorite 80s songs, and it just kind of hits my sweet spot. 'Cause you belong to the city. You belong to the night. Yeah, I lived in Los Angeles for 19 years, and then I moved to New York, and now I'm currently living in Seattle. And whenever I go back to Los Angeles for a visit, this becomes my theme song for whatever reason, where I start feeling very deep and soulful when I think of the lyrics. You know, now you're back again, and you're feeling strange. So much has happened and nothing has changed. I don't know why that really resonates with me, but it's used just so beautifully in Miami Vice.
That's cool.
So let me ask this question. As I understood it, and I like I mentioned early on, I have not seen even episode 1 of this. But as I understood it, the original script, Tubbs going, like, he's a, was it a Chicago cop or some
New York cop
who comes down to Miami to investigate the death of a friend of his.
His brother.
Brother. Yes. Sorry. Yeah. So Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Spot on Beverly Hills Cop, right?
I mean, right.
Tubbs is not as funny as Eddie Murphy, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, but he's much prettier.
That's maybe so.
Also true. Yes.
Okay, so this song is also by Glenn Frey, also co-written by Jack Temption. Did I mention he wrote Peaceful Easy Feeling?
And Already Gone.
And co-wrote Already Gone. He also co-wrote Somebody. So here's a...
Somebody by Bryan Adams?
No, Somebody by the Eagles, Oofus.
Okay.
All right. Done with you, sir. So, okay, so here's what I've got on this, on Glenn Frey. Have you guys seen Almost Famous?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you know that the Eagles were inspirational for the band in Almost Famous?
Okay. I
did not know that, but that actually makes sense.
Okay, so apparently at least the key line in the movie came from Glenn Frey. So he's, I mean, Cameron Crowe was like 16 years old and nobody at Rolling Stone knew how old he was when they sent him to go do this report on this band.
Right.
And so he comes and he's, I mean, these guys are in their mid 20s at this point, but they're hanging out, treating him like a little brother and teaching him good stuff. And right before, you know, they're about to leave, Cameron Crowe's about to leave, Glenn Frey says, "I don't care what you write about us. Just make us sound cool."
That's it.
That's
Glenn
Frey.
It's a good quote.
That's cool. Okay, so this song reached number 2 on the Hot 100. We talked about this last week when we discussed The Heat Is On. The Heat Is On also reached number 2. That's the highest charting solo songs for the Eagles. Don Henley never got higher than number 5.
Wow.
Crazy. So Can't Fight This Feeling blocked The Heat Is On, and We Built This City blocks You Belong to the City. Are you kidding me?
Well,
well,
of course, man.
Marconi plays the mamba.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to the radio.
I know.
I love this song, but I really, really, really am anxious to get to the next song. Anybody with me?
Yep. Let's go.
All right.
Next song on the album is called In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins.
I can feel it.
Okay, so I know that we started with the beginning of the song, but if you ask anybody about this song, they're going to talk to you about the middle.
The drum fill, right?
The drum fill. So In the Air Tonight was the debut solo by Phil Collins. It was released as the lead single from Face Value, which came out in January of 81. So it was already well into its run by the time they decided to use it in Miami Vice. But we have talked about the co-writer of this song, a guy named Hugh Padgham, before when we did our Synchronicity episode. Hugh Padgham was the producer on Synchronicity.
Okay.
And I brought up at that time, he is the guy who came up with the gated reverb drum sound that makes this song as iconic as it is.
Interesting. Okay. You know who else contributed to the creation of this song?
Phil Collins' wife's boyfriend.
Yes. More specifically, Phil Collins' wife's interior decorator.
Well, yes. So there are two stories about this song, and one is an urban legend and the other one is not.
Right.
The urban legend was some sort of idea that he had seen a camp counselor see somebody drown, or maybe his brother drown, which is why you get these "I saw what you did" lyrics in the song.
Yep.
But that one is not true.
Right.
But there is a story that is true related to the interior designer painter for the Collins household. He performs this song live.
On Top of the Pops.
And just before he begins the song, before the cameras roll, he sees a paint bucket sitting off stage.
Right.
He picks up the paint bucket and puts it on top of his piano
as a shout out
message to his to his soon to be ex-wife, "I know what you did."
You know, I wow. saw her discuss this, and she saw that and knew it was intended for her. And the interviewer was asking her about it. She's like, "I was really hurt by that. That really bothered me. That really hurt my feelings." And they're like, "So are you saying you didn't have an affair?" She's like, "No, I had the affair, but I didn't like the paint bucket."
Yeah. Bill Collins, "My feelings were a little hurt too."
Okay, Morgan, this is one of the best uses of music in all of Miami Vice. Like, you think of one moment in time, this is it.
Yeah, this is one of the best uses of music in television history. It's one of those songs that's so intrinsically linked to Miami Vice. That even people with only vague memories of Miami Vice can probably come up with that scene from the pilot, Brother's Keeper, with Crockett and Tubbs driving around Miami at night in the Ferrari while this song plays. And it's so good. Overall, the pilot's pretty solid, but the series isn't quite fully formed yet. It still has those cop show elements, like a more traditional cop show, like it's a little Hill Street Blues or a little Starsky and Hutch-ish. And you have, you know, it's before Edward James Olmos as Castillo joins the show. So instead you have Gregory Sierra as more of a conventional gruff police lieutenant. And you have a lot of business with Crockett's wife and they're struggling to make their marriage work. And so, you know, these things that we have seen in a million cop shows. So the pilot's not quite there yet, but we get to this scene, and this is Miami Vice in its final form. This is why Miami Vice just became a cultural juggernaut and why it's still beloved today. I think Michael Mann and everyone involved with Miami Vice instantly realized that with this scene in the pilot, this kind of song specifically is perfect for Miami Vice. It's that MTV Cops, but it's also, you know, which always sounds sort of dismissive, and because Miami Vice is very MTV, but it's also very cinematic. It's just beautifully filmed, beautiful music, beautifully shot, beautifully lit. And I tend to refer to Miami Vice a lot as substance through style. And that's sort of what I mean in that this scene, it's a really kind of profound moment with, and it's all it is, like if you describe it to someone, it's like, well, yeah, two guys are in a hot car and they're driving down the street at night and a song plays and everyone goes, if you haven't seen it, you don't get it. But when you see it, and In the Air Tonight is such a great song for it. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Can we touch on that for just a moment? Because even though I haven't, I was not a watcher of the show, there is a style about the show that is so distinct from anything that came before it. Like if I think about cop shows before this, you got Chips, you got Starsky and Hutch, you got Hill Street Blues. All of them were still TV shows and they looked like TV shows. And when you get to this, this looks like a movie, which of course now in television, you know, 30 whatever years later, that's, oh my gosh, is it 40 years later?
It's 40 years
later. It is.
Oh, it hurts my heart. 40 years later, that's what they do. They make TV to look like movies. But at this time, I don't know that I'd ever seen it done like this before.
I don't think it had been done. Yeah.
Yeah. Miami Vice was so meticulous and so careful in every aspect of it. And I was thinking of production design, where famously the series had a rule that they couldn't use the color brown, you know, so, but things like that really made a difference. And it really led to such a very distinctive look and feel, and as we're talking about the music, sound of Miami Vice, that nothing on television before it looked or sounded like that.
Yeah, we talked about how the use of this song is perfect in this TV show. However, I would be remiss if I did not bring up another piece of entertainment that uses this song wonderfully.
Are you talking about the Cadbury commercial?
No, I'm not talking about the Cadbury commercial. I'm talking about in The Hangover when they come in and Mike Tyson tells them to shut up so he can listen to the drum fill.
Oh, yes.
And then at the end of the drum fill, he just decks that guy.
But I've been waiting for this moment for all my life.
One more time,
guys. Oh, Lord. Oh, jeez.
Classic. Classic use of this song. All right, Morgan, are you a lover or hater of Elvis the Alligator?
I admire Elvis for kind of adding this kind of, I guess, whimsy to Miami Vice, where if you've noticed throughout the series, Elvis got phased out throughout. And then finally, you know, in the first couple of seasons, Elvis was around a lot and always on Crockett's boat. And by the end of the season, your series, you would just never knew that Crockett ever had a gator named Elvis. I think Elvis works. I think it's possibly a little broad, but, you know, Crockett's got a gator. Why not?
Okay, so one more thing on In the Air Tonight. This song, we talked about Phil Collins' run through the 80s and how many number one hits he has and how successful Genesis is and how every other song on the radio was a Phil Collins or Genesis song. This song peaks out at number 19.
Shut up.
Wow.
This song barely cracks the top 20.
So was this in 81 or
81 August of 81 is when it tops out.
Wow.
Now listen to this. Songs that placed higher on the chart in August of 81 included songs by Air Supply, the Commodores, John Schneider of the Dukes of Hazzard.
I've got no problem with what you're saying. I love Air Supply.
The Pointer Sisters.
Great.
The Oak Ridge Boys.
Loved them.
Kenny Rogers.
Huge at that time.
The theme for The Greatest American Hero.
Which is my favorite TV theme of all time. Okay.
That's a graveyard of...
It's not a graveyard. We can say that In the Air Tonight was ahead of its time. I will...
There we go.
I will...
Jesse's Girl was also on that chart, so...
Yeah, yeah.
That's right before MTV changes our lives.
Yeah, it is. Right before. Okay, so is this the point you hit stop on your tape player?
Hit stop on your tape player, kick it out, flip it over for side two.
Here we are back again with the Miami Vice theme.
This one's longer, though.
So this is our opportunity. Since we already talked about Jan Hammer and the music, we can talk about the video in this one. You guys remember the video?
Crockett and Tubbs are chasing Jan Hammer around his synthesizer.
That's right. Yeah.
So the video does this marvelous job of intercutting scenes from the actual Miami Vice TV series with scenes that they filmed separately of Jan Hammer running around with some sort of briefcase of something or other. Now, Jan Hammer is dressed in very much the Miami Vice style, but Jan Hammer is a short, very balding, slightly tubby man.
Yes.
I don't know if he'd have gotten the part in the actual TV show, but yeah. They have this great moment where the police chief is like, he's back, and puts the piece of paper down, and it's a picture of Jan Hammer, and he looks like the most unintimidating, like, crossing guard at your school guy in the world.
Nice. Nice.
I was watching I actually watched a video on the making of the video, and the director of the video was one of the editors from the TV show. Like, I feel like somebody was walking through the hall like, oh, hey, we got to go up to New York and do Jan's part of the video. And they're like, who's still here?
Hey, Jimmy hasn't left for the weekend. You got it.
Jimmy, would you like to direct a music video? Yes.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Okay.
That moves us right into the song Vice by Grandmaster Melle Mel.
Melle Mel.
The right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law.
All right. If this song reminds you of the song White Lines off of the Beat Street soundtrack, There's a reason for that. This is Grandmaster Flash, baby.
Grandmaster Melle Mel was a member of Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five.
Yeah.
Where's Def Dave when we need him?
I don't know, but I listened to White Lines on repeat back in 1983. I can tell you that.
Speaking of White Lines, that music video starred Lawrence Fishburne and was directed by Spike Lee.
Nice.
Wow. How about that?
Nice.
And that's all you have on
it? Well, that's pretty much all I got. I do have something else for you. Melle Mel is believed to be the first rapper to use the term MC. MC Melle Mel. He is also the rap voice that you hear on Chaka Khan's I Feel For You.
Chaka Khan, let me rock it, let me rock it, Chaka Khan. Let me rock it, that's all I want to do. Chaka Khan, let me rock it, let me rock it, Chaka Khan. Let me rock it, let me feel for you.
I did not know that.
How about that?
Part of that song that I liked.
Chaka Khan, Chaka Khan. Everybody Chaka Khan. Actually, I was talking to Jeff Johnson about what we're doing, Miami Vice soundtrack. And he's like, oh, I remember that one song. They give you your Miranda rights at the beginning of the song. Like, this is it.
This is it.
Okay. Morgan, you know when this appears in any episode? What do you got
for us? Yeah, it appears in the season two episode, Whatever Works. And here is the thing. I like the song a lot. The season two episode it appears in, Whatever Works, is among my favorites. But in the context of the episode, I barely ever noticed the song. And that's because Whatever Works is one of the very few Miami Vice episodes that has a live band performance in it. That's the one where the power station appears.
Ah.
And, you know, the power station, at the height of their fame, performed live in a bar. And there's a show-stopping bit in it in which an extremely drunk John Taylor of Duran Duran and Power Station. He's playing himself, and before the set, he's chatting with a visibly annoyed Crockett. And you can tell it's a hilarious scene because John Taylor is so drunk and he can barely get his words out. And Don Johnson is just so mad. And you can tell he's so mad at the drunk English pop star who is ruining his show. And it's this beautiful exchange. And Pamela DeBar, who of course used to date Don Johnson, but also was married to Michael DeBar at the time, who was the lead singer of the Power Station after Robert Palmer left, writes about this, not in I'm With the Band, but in her second memoir, Take Another Piece of My Heart. And she's hilarious on it, where it's exactly what you think is happening, where Power Station just showed up super duper drunk. You know, just we're not taking it seriously. And Don's just going, great, this is my show. And you idiots are ruining it.
Wow.
But so anyway, point being, to go back to Vice and Melly Mel, great song. And it's a lot of fun. It reminds me of Smuggler's Blues, and that it's another of these songs that ostensibly a cautionary tale with, oh boy, you don't want to be involved with drugs or prostitutes or mobsters or anything. But it kind of comes across as a celebration of all of that because it's such a fun song. And White Lines has the same thing. Speaking of White Lines, if I know anything more about Miami Vice, anything, a topic that I know more about than I know about Miami Vice, it's Duran Duran. So I worry that I'm going to just segue here. But Duran Duran covered White Lines. They did a great version of White Lines that they incorporate into all of their concerts even today. And it's one of those songs that when Duran Duran does it, when Grandmaster Flash does it, it just comes about as a celebration of cocaine. It's.
All right, moving on to the next song. This is Better Be Good to Me by Tina Turner.
Oh, yes, I'm touched by this show of emotion. Should I be fractured by your lack of devotion?
Okay, everybody knows that this song is by Tina Turner.
Yes.
Except it's a cover.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
This song was originally released by a band called Spider in 1981. Not really sure what happened with that particular release. They don't really have anything else to speak of beyond that. But fortunately, Tina Turner picked it up and made it into something incredibly good.
Okay, I got something for you on Spider. You ready for this?
Yeah.
I'm going to blow your mind on Spider. Okay. So this song was written by Holly Knight and Mike Chapman, who were in the band Spider. So Holly Knight is responsible for writing the song Ragdoll by Aerosmith, Obsession by Animotion.
Wow.
Love is a Battlefield and Invincible by Pat Benatar. She also wrote The Warrior by Scandal. Mike Chapman wrote the song Kiss You All Over and what ultimately became Mickey by Tony Basil.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh my gosh. Well, there's two huge hitters for the songwriting community.
There you go.
Wow.
How about that?
Nice. That's a good one.
So this song reached number 5, November of 1984. Much better top 5 this week.
Okay.
You have Better Be Good to Me at number 5. You have Out of Touch by Hall & Oates at number 4. You have I Feel For You by Chaka Khan at 3. You have Purple Rain by Prince at number 2. And you have Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go at number 1.
Very good.
This song comes from the episode Give a Little, Take a Little. This was a depressing episode for me, Morgan. Tell us about that.
Give a Little, Take a Little, oddly enough, was the first Miami Vice episode I ever saw. And when it first aired in 1984. It's a very depressing episode. An undercover Gina gets forced into sex with Polly from Rocky, Burt Young. And then later...
Gosh, that is terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop right there. It's horrible enough, right?
Stop right there. It's horrible. And then later kills him in the line of duty. And it's extremely depressing. But yeah, I watched it while visiting with my aunt, who she had just discovered Miami Vice, and it was her new favorite show. And I was 10 in 1984, and I watched it with my aunt, who at the time did not have kids and everything. And after it was done, she was like, I probably shouldn't have shown that to a 10-year-old. And I was all, no, that is great. I am now going to shape my life and personality around this series, which, you know, is exactly what I did. It's one of the more, I would say, depressing episodes of season one, certainly. But it's a good one, and Better Be Good to Me is such a great song. And by the way, before I forget, why did Tina Turner never appear on a Miami Vice episode? That seems like a terrible oversight. Amongst all of these music heavy hitters, she would have been perfect.
Absolutely. Two songs in season one, right? They use Better Be Good to Me, and they use What's Love Got to Do with It?
Yes, of course. Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about these three songs at the end. They're all by Jan Hammer. Let's kind of group them up.
So the name of these three songs are Flashback, Chase, and Evan. And the important thing to remember is that Jan Hammer was writing not only, you know, individual songs for this album, he was writing the weekly soundtrack to the show. They would film the show, they would edit it together, they would send the copy to him up in New York, and he would watch the show without music and figure out how to put the music to it every week. And he would turn it around in a week. So it's weird because he's making 20 minutes of music worthy of a TV series that we said the music in this series has changed the face of TV. He was doing that every single week for 5 years.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Crazy. And these three songs are just key examples of the type of music he was doing with that soundtrack.
Yeah, for sure. I was listening to, you know, Flashback is just kind of, you know, okay or whatever. Chase sounds like just a faster, more energetic version of the Miami Vice theme to me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But Evan is one I want to spend a minute on, especially with you, Morgan. Tell us, because as I'm researching this episode, I'm like looking for this episode called Evan on Tubi. It's not there.
Right. It is nowhere. It almost never is streaming, but it has shown up. Like, I think NBC.com had it briefly, but the lost episode. Evan is also my favorite episode of Miami Vice. And it is actually a lot of people's absolute favorite episode of Miami Vice. And there's no real consensus as to why it's been dropped from streaming. I had the screenwriter of Evan, Paul Diamond, actually contact me on Twitter and say, do you know why, you know, why Evan doesn't show up on screen? You know,
it's
show up
anywhere. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so exactly. And he doesn't even know. He thinks, and I think, it is a music rights issue in that it uses two Peter Gabriel songs. The series uses a lot of Peter Gabriel music throughout. They use more Peter Gabriel songs than Phil Collins songs, oddly enough.
And, wow. You know,
despite Phil Collins being so linked. So it's not that Peter Gabriel had a problem with his music being used in Miami Vice, but the two songs that are used, Rhythm of the Heat and Biko, are both kind of very personal, very important songs. And I think Peter Gabriel just said, yeah, I don't really want to give permission. I've also heard the argument that people are convinced it's a content issue. I don't think it is, but I don't have any inside knowledge, and it could be. Rare for 1984, it deals very openly with homosexuality. Throughout the episode, there is the use of a prominent anti-gay slur. And people go, well, maybe that's what did it. But it, like, in context, it's a very thoughtful episode, and everything's very well done. There's also a scene where you see a swastika, so maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. There could be content reasons. In other words, I'm convinced that in this case, it really is the music rights. But in any case, my favorite episode, it's Crockett gets involved in a case with his former partner, Evan, who is just an absolute loose cannon, who's working on the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Task Force, and they have a case with Vice that intersects. And Evan and Crockett absolutely hate each other, and Evan, who is played by William Russ, who is best known as the nice dad on Boy Meets World, but he gives just this really scorching great performance here, is just so unhinged and so dangerous, and they keep colliding, and there's something going on that Crockett won't tell Tubbs. It turns out that Crockett and Evan were best friends with another cop, Mike Orgel, who turned out to be gay, and this is 1984, and Evan didn't deal with it well and just started making a lot of, you know, anti-gay remarks and kind of got him pushed out of the, you know, like put onto a desk job in the force. And this partner, Mike Orgel, eventually kind of ended up getting in the middle of a violent robbery and getting shot, but essentially is a suicide, and Evan has never forgiven himself for that. And at the end of it, Evan sacrifices his life for Crockett and dies in his arms on one of those freeze frames. And it's just, it uses this, not only these really good Peter Gabriel songs, again, Rhythm of the Heat and Biko, which are both wonderful songs, it has this Jan Hammer instrumental, Evan, which is a really lovely piece. And it's one of those episodes that it doesn't really play into the larger Miami Vice mythology at all, but it's so well done that a lot of people, myself included, rank it as their favorite.
Jan Hammer received an Emmy nomination specifically for this episode.
Yes, he did.
That's interesting. I wish I could watch that episode. Now, you got me. Yeah, fired up for it.
It does show up legit sometimes, and whenever it does, people email me to let me know. And among Miami Vice people, it's kind of a big deal when Evan shows up.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of the album. But Dee and I have talked. We're going to do a bonus song.
Doing a bonus song. The Beverly Hills soundtrack has 11 solid songs on it. This one has a few more of the instrumentals. We kind of combined these last three. And so we are going to throw in a bonus song called She's a Beauty by the Tubes. The story behind this song is so freaking good.
It is,
it's
right?
So freaking good.
Okay, lay it on me.
Okay, so the writers of this song are B. Waybill,
yep,
David Foster, who we've talked about in the past.
St. Elmo's Fire, right?
And Steve Lukather, who is the guitarist for Toto, the guitarist on Thriller.
Yeah.
I mean, just a huge studio musician in addition to being, you know, a member of one of the biggest groups of the 80s. But it is inspired by Fee Waybill's walk down the street in a special district in San Francisco called the Tenderloin.
Yeah, who he says he, you know, accidentally ended up there on the way to Macy's. I was like, wait a minute.
So as he's walking down the street towards Macy's, you know.
Right, because that's what you do.
He's in this red light district, and there is a sign that says, pay a dollar, talk to a naked girl.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I passed this sign, I don't know how many times before, and just kept on walking. But this time, for some reason, I'm like, well, let's give this a try. And I think the idea was it's like next to a massage parlor. And so you talk to the naked girl, and then that entices you to go into the massage parlor.
Right.
Finish things up. He says, what ensues is one of the most awkward conversations I've ever had in my life. She's everything.
Yeah, so she's trying to talk him into coming back, and he's like, you know, you're really pretty. What are you doing here?
Yeah.
You're gorgeous. We're looking for dancers. Would you like to? And he says she's ignoring him, just flat ignoring everything he says to her.
Just going through her script.
I'm in a rock band, and we need dancers. Yeah, that's great. Come on back.
We're called the Tubes. Okay.
Right. You know, when he wrote this song, he actually wrote the lyrics, you can talk to a naked girl, but his producer's like, no way, you can't use that. And he's like, yes, I'm using it. No, we're not. And they had this big fight over it. So his producer ended up winning, and he actually, that's why you get the line, you can talk to a pretty girl.
And now this experience, I'm thinking about it. I'm like, oh, I remember this video. And then all of a sudden I went, wait a minute. No, this was a Madonna video. That was the one where it was the little kid who would put the dollar in and watch her do her striptease.
That's it.
And, you know, follow the door down as it's closing. So do you remember the video on this?
It's very similar. Yes. That's the video. Top of my head. So I could be wrong. I believe the young boy is played by the late Alexis Arquette.
That's right.
Acting family. Now that you mention it, it's kind of crossing in my mind with that Madonna video, because it very much kind of is the open your heart thing with the young boy at a peep show. And
okay, I've got something for you. So you mentioned Alexis Arquette,
right,
who was credited as Robert Arquette when this happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, a member of the Arquette family, his/her involvement in this video is due to the fact that Steve Picaro was dating Rosanna.
That's right.
During the Toto years, to create the song
sense.
Rosanna. And her little brother is standing right there. We need somebody in our video. Well, here's my little brother, Robert.
That's perfect. That is perfect.
Wow.
Rosanna, throwback to our Toto episode.
Go check out Toto versus
Duran Duran.
You got it.
Duran Duran, our best of 82.
Yep.
Nice.
Rio.
So you know who the director on the video was?
It's Kenny Ortega.
Kenny Ortega, who we talked about in our Dirty Dancing episode. He was the choreographer for Dirty Dancing. He was the guy who went tape after tape after tape after tape until he finally, very last tape, found the song for Dirty Dancing.
Now
had the time of my life. Yeah, that's right.
And he also choreographed the dance scene at the parade for Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yep.
And get ready for a button here. Get ready for a throwback. He directed High School Musical.
Wow.
It all comes full circle.
So She's a Beauty reaches number 10, July of 1983. I'm not going to go through the top 10, but this song appears in what I think is one of the weirdest episodes of Miami Vice. It stars Susie Amos from Titanic, who looks like a 12-year-old porn star in this episode. And she's wearing like ballerina outfits and... This is not at all what
she's got like a full leotard and tights on, and she's shooting a porn film. And my mind goes, how do you shoot a porn film when you have a leotard under tights? Because that's a hard outfit to get out of. And in a porn film, you kind of think that the focus is going to be on getting out of your clothes without having to just do a lot of contorting. But yeah, it's the season one episode, Heart of Darkness. It's got Ed O'Neill from Married with Children and other things. This early scene with Susie Amos shooting a porn film. And again, she does look extremely young. And then she gets murdered like immediately after that and is never seen again in the rest of the episode. But She's a Beauty plays while they're filming this weird porn film.
Okay, so that brings us to the end, even with our bonus song.
I know.
And that means it's time for Final Judgment.
Morgan, please be our guest. Final Judgment, your pick between the Miami Vice soundtrack and Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack.
Yeah, I am going to come down on the side of Miami Vice, you know, and that's Miami Vice. It's my baby. But the Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack is so, so strong. It's New Attitude and Neutron Dance. Neutron Dance is one of those songs that I could listen to all day. It's fabulous. My deciding factor, it's going to be head-to-head Glenn Frey. And it's the 1-2 punch of Smuggler's Blues and especially You Belong to the City that wins out over The Heat Is On, which is a fabulous song, but it's no You Belong to the City. So I'm just going to give it to Miami Vice.
Sweet. E.
Well, this is interesting for me. Yes, there are some smash hits off of the Beverly Hills soundtrack. Axel F, world dominating in that time in history. Absolutely amazing instrumental song. And as far as the instrumental songs go on those two albums, I would lean towards Axel F over the Miami Vice theme for sure. But album to album, song to song, Miami Vice has some amazing songs that cannot be overcome by the genuinely good songs on Beverly Hills soundtrack, but not monumental Phil Collins songs, monumental Glenn Frey songs. This album is packed with amazing pop songs, and I got to pick Miami Vice as well.
All right. Well, I guess that leaves me then, huh?
Yeah.
So I love the Miami Vice soundtrack. I love the Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack. I own both of these, but there's only so much Jan Hammer one person can take. So I am not overly a Patti LaBelle guy, but New Attitude and Stir It Up are great pop songs. They're not total bangers, but they're good. They're solid. Neutron Dance is an 80s banger. The Heat Is On is an 80s banger. Axel F is an 80s banger. So I'm taking the stronger, poppier Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack over the instrumental heavy Miami Vice soundtrack.
That is fair.
Okay. Next week, we have The Karate Kid versus The Last Dragon, the karate movies from 1984. We're going to match those up head to head, and we're going to sweep the leg and crane kick our way to the top. To be awesome.
I'm going to confess at this time, I actually did tell Jason last night. I was like, okay, I have to get this off of my chest. I've never seen an episode of Miami Vice. So he knew going in that this was the case, but the first words out of his mouth was, well, you know, you can watch this on Tubi, right? And I was like, Jason, I'm struggling to find time to watch Karate Kid and The Last Dragon. I can't do an entire 5-year series. Okay, buddy. I can't do that. But that matchup they're going to be fun. I've gotten Last Dragon in. I've seen Karate Kid a million times. So it will be great. And those two, again, you've got some great, you got a great soundtrack on both of them.
You're already, I can see the glow happening around you. Uh-huh. Morgan, thank you so much reached out to you. You don't know us. We just hit you up and said, hey, jump on with us. And we appreciate you doing that. That was great.
You are our new friend now. Yeah.
Thank you. This has been so much fun. And I am so happy, A, that you reached out to me, and B, that I discovered your podcast, because this is exactly my kind of thing. These sorts of discussions make me very, very happy. So I'm looking forward to going back and listening to all of your episodes, because you two are delightful, and this was so much fun.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. By the way, if you guys would like to reach out and support the podcast, you can do that very easily by just going to the rating on your podcast app and hitting the 5 stars for us. Following us helps us on our ratings as well and gets us up there for other people to hear about. And if you want to donate a little money towards our investment here, we have a Patreon page as well. It's patreon.com/Shirley Podcast. And for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of our secret episodes, our one hit wonder episodes, where we deep dive into the one hit wonders of the 80s and 90s and some other crappy songs that Jason makes me listen to.
Hey, listen, before you get off that subject, we will be Patreoning on some more Miami Vice 1984 songs. So we are going to do Somebody's Watching Me with Def Dave.
Yep.
We're going to be doing Turn Up the Radio with Amanda Janik, and who knows what else we'll hit up over there. So if you like what we're doing Miami Vice wise, you're definitely going to want to check us out on Patreon.
Guys, we can't tell you how much we appreciate you listening to us. It's crazy to us that you guys keep coming back. Thanks again. We couldn't do it without you. We will see you all next week.
Bye, guys.
Wax on, hat. Wax off.
Hello, everybody. This is Morgan Richter of, and now I can't remember what I do on YouTube. See?
All right.